Mike and Miana gather playing some game. But I pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the R-H-A-P-B-M-B. Mike and Miana gather playing some game. But I pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the R.
Hi everybody, and welcome to the RHAP B&B for episode 4 of Survivor Winners at War. My name is Mike Bloom. The heartbreak continues. It's good heartbreak. It's achy break and heartbreak. But damn, it hurts so good to talk about Winners at War. And here's a panel to quell our sadness, yet talk about the joy that is this season of Survivor. First, Liana Boris. Liana, how are you?
Oh, man. Yeah, I'm like Ethan over here saying my mantras, trying to get through the achy breaky heart that is this season. Call me Billy Ray Cyrus, because, man, it hurts.
Well, we're going to be talking to a guy who goes by many names. Billy Ray might not be one of them, though. Maybe it will by the end. You know him from the power rankings he does every week here on RHAP proper with Gavin Whitson and Victoria Beaumont. You know him from a myriad of podcasts out here on the network, as well as covering the challenge with Brian Scally on Dom and Colin, which actually announced a comeback date. Thank God it's in April, because March just seems like a crazy month to be a reality TV fan. But we're happy he made some time for us. It's Licorice Liguori himself, SpongeBob Matt. How's it going?
I am never going to beat that intro. That was great. Thanks, Mike. And thanks, Liana. Thank you guys so much for having me here. I wasn't sure if I was going to get a chance to talk about Survivor 40 anywhere. So the second that I got a message that I had an invite, I was so excited. Very happy to be here. Like you said, Challenge is going to be back soon. There is a lot of reality TV on right now. And every once in a while, you'll be watching, you know, the Australian Survivor, or BB Can just started again. And I'll be watching that, and I'm like, wait a second, like, am I forgetting the fact that like an all winter season of Survivor is airing right now? Like, I need to not only think about that on Wednesdays and like when I'm writing my blog. Like, there's a lot more time that I need to be thinking about this season.
There's so much reality TV. We were talking in the pre-show, the $75 patrons will get this, but yeah, about how it's watching TV from the moment you wake up to the moment you go to bed. Like, it's so much content. I'm enjoying it so much, although this week was particularly difficult after last week as well. But oh my gosh, it's all winners, guys. It's all winners.
Yes, I still cannot believe it. I still can't believe a lot of things. You know, now that we are staring down the barrel of a swap and we're looking at who left, who's on the edge of extinction right now, it completely baffles me that, you know, you have people like Sarah Lucina being super chummy with everybody, that Sandra was the swing vote this episode, that Boston Rob is not only still on the beach but giving words of encouragement to Michelle. These are people that we all had dead to rights in the preseason, yet they're all still here. And I guess it really proves that anything can happen in this season of Survivor, where there's so many different levels of thinking and so many different levels of reputations and previous connections and everything, that it really is tough to predict week to week what's going to happen.
I think Tyson
is the closest one to being, I guess, on that top tier with the rest of those guys that you just mentioned. Like, everybody else that's been voted out so far has been somewhat middle tier. Obviously, you know, you can say certain things about their gameplay. Like, I think Natalie is one of the top winners that we've ever seen. But in terms of like legend status kind of thing, like, those guys are all still in the game. That's incredible to me.
It was also really fascinating to hear Tony talk in this episode about where the threats are. I think it was in his conversation with Tyson or a confessional, but essentially we got the idea that, you know, Tyson was ahead of him in terms of threat level, which is insane, but that's the way that he sees it. And then Sandra is like slightly behind them. So it's so interesting to see all of these dynamics. Also, we got to hear Tony call Tyson T-Bone, which is something
God.
I never knew I needed in my life, but I did.
I am so happy. I feel like it's been a long, long time since we've gotten a Tony nickname. You know, really since he didn't get any opportunities in Game Changers to do so, at least on screen. But I feel like he's really lapping up his time here, where not since really the days of the Young Lad and Jeremy have we gotten him being able to nick. I guess, does Sandra count? Does a mispronunciation count as a nickname?
I don't know. Ask the nickname expert. Ask Matt.
I get the nicknames from Rob, so we're going to have to get the big guy on the phone here.
Okay, whatever, SpongeBob,
crazy,
Matt.
Also, how crazy is it that before the season, you know, the same thing people were saying about Tony, well, at least we have the Edge of Extinction. We're guaranteed every single episode of Tony. He's still in the game. He's still in the main game. We don't need the Edge of Extinction to see Tony all season long. He's killing it.
Let's talk this. Yeah, let's talk about this episode, because I've seen, you know, I've seen a mixed range of opinions, I guess more mixed than I think the previous three episodes, and namely because of that Edge of Extinction segment. And I think it was an absolutely beautiful sequence, especially for somebody like Ethan and the journey he's been on. I've also seen some people kind of push back against the segment, saying, why do we need to see this? Why do we need to see these people bonding when they're eliminated from the game? You know, you're taking time away from all the dynamics that are going on. Liana, where did you stand on this episode personally, especially in comparison to the three that came before it?
Okay, so in this episode in general, I thought that it was good to finally see the dynamics on the Red Tribe because, you know, they hadn't had to go to tribal. So it was really difficult to know where everybody stood, like Nick Wilson talked about. Right. You can promise so many things, but until you actually see the votes fall, you really don't know where the lines are drawn.
Right. I think when you take an Instamatic photo, that's when you know where truly the lines exist.
Does anybody know what that is?
I think that's a new social platform that he kept under his hat until now. I think this was a soft launch for Instamatic.
You can find me on instamaticphotos.com or the app or whatever.
What do you think that would do? Maybe it's for like people you can't pin down. And when you take a photo of them, like you cemented a location for them so you could use it for timestamps.
Like it's Instagram, but it's Instamatic.
I hear my name somewhere in there.
It's just photos of Matt's. It's Matt's.
Oh yeah, the only Matt driven platform out there on the internet.
Matt bracket come to life. I'm with it. I'll download.
I'll download. I'll be a user. It's cool.
Liana, I don't think it'll be allowed to be a user unless you have to enter your name as like Matt Boris.
Ooh. There's room for all the Matts in the world. So if anybody wants to, you know, make Matt their middle name, their nickname, you're all welcome.
Okay, that'll be my nickname. Liana Matt Boris. That's like, why is that your nickname? I just really wanted to be on Instamatic.
I need to be in from the ground up on Instamatic.
Yeah, just it's whatever. It's too cool. You wouldn't get it. But okay, I have to talk about the Edge of Extinction moment, though, too, because I saw people saying, oh, this is taking time away. I was so emotional when I was watching that scene. I almost cried, especially when everybody went up with Ethan to get the last log. It was so sad, but also like, oh my God, it was I was crazy emotional. Then I rewatched it and I get where people were complaining that it was boring because it was really boring on the rewatch. But in the emotion of the moment, I really enjoyed the segment on TV.
What are you thinking, Matt?
So, I mean, going back to like the last season of The Challenge, we ended up with 90 minute episodes. And there were times throughout the season where I was like, OK, maybe we don't need these 90 minutes each week. And then Probst was talking to, I want to say, ET Canada before the season started about how people say they want more time. But then when the time comes, they actually don't want it. And I was like, maybe he's right, because I had that thought with The Challenge. But now that we have this here, this is showing me that there are specific seasons of shows, and this, you know, particular season of All Winners, that you need that extra time. If you're going to have Edge of Extinction, you need to give us some extra time so that we can see what's going on in the game and not have, you know, an entire 10 minutes of the show or whatever it was devoted to the Edge of Extinction, because I liked this segment. I like the people on the edge, and I've been, you know, putting it in my blogs each week, talking about how I am glad that the Edge is here for this season, because I don't want to lose these people already. If I had lost Natalie Anderson after one episode and that was it for her entire return appearance, I would have been devastated.
Yeah, and then she wouldn't become rich in Fire Token. She wouldn't be able to invest in Instamatic and become one of the angel
investors.
She
became the richest person in the world, and we are getting to witness it in front of our eyes. You know, so if we didn't get that opportunity, I would have been pretty upset. So, you know, who knows how it's going to play out in terms of like the game itself. Obviously, last time the guy came back and won. Who knows if anything like that will happen this time, but I think we're getting stuff from the Edge to at least satisfy me. And I'm sure other people who were, you know, very sad that Ethan went last week as well. All of us are still heartbroken over that. And then, you know, it's as our favorites keep going over there, I think, you know, it's at least for me, it's I still feel good about having it here.
Yeah, I think with this particular episode, when you look at it after the fact, I think we realized that this was by far the most straightforward vote of the season so far. To the point where I think actually Rob talked about this a bit in his podcast with T-Bird, but I think there have been some Nancy Drews out there on the Survivor subreddit that have pointed out that, in fact, maybe Tony's, you know, last minute pitch to save Tyson as a shield might have actually been done out of sequence. And so really, Tyson was the dead man walking that Wendell promised for basically the entire episode. And so from that perspective, I guess they got a bit lucky that they could use something like the Edge of Extinction to pad it out. Like, yes, these are amazing personalities, but I mean, if they're looking for some strategic content, unfortunately, it did not seem like DeCall, at least in the moment, was providing a lot of intrigue up in the air dynamics that Selle has been the past couple of tribal councils. I can absolutely understand, like you said, about the time suck nature of it all, especially on a rewatch where maybe you're not as emotionally compelled knowing what's going to happen. But I don't know, as someone who has had the opportunity to talk with a bunch of Survivor editors, you know, people have been saying, like, what does this mean about Ethan's chances? I don't think it really means anything. You know, talking with these editors, they really do say, like, yes, long-term storylines do sort of exist, but really, each episode, we're looking for what's the most entertaining content out of that three-day period. And I really do feel like they found this extremely, you know, emotional, a beautiful, beautiful journey for Ethan. And so they really wanted to focus on that, understandably so. And so the reason why this was in here, I honestly think, take it at face value. It was to highlight this beautiful scene from Ethan, and less so about like, oh, great, this means he doesn't come back into the game and they're sending him off, or this means he's definitely coming back into the game. I honestly think it's just something they wanted to use that they thought was really compelling and helped fill the time when otherwise the gameplay was more stagnant than it has been in previous weeks.
And it was so emotional and it was so inspirational. And that's what, I get it. I totally get it. And I loved it. I mean, when it aired, especially, oh my gosh, I was, ugh, y'all people are heartless out there. I was so sad.
Well, let's start getting into our fair here on the B&B.
Wait. I have a question. Do you guys, I thought of this for the challenge. Okay. I don't know how I feel about this, but I want to talk about throwing the challenge. This isn't my discussion question. I have a discussion question.
Oh, I thought you were talking about like MTV's the challenge.
No. Well, no.
We could talk about that.
I'm very excited for the challenge. Come through, Big Brother. Okay.
One survivor. Wow,
throwing shade to an actual Survivor US contestant that's going to be on there.
Okay. That's fine. Well, I would discuss that later. Do you think they threw the challenge?
No. I heard there was some fishiness going on with Nick Wilson on Twitter talking about like he was tweeting at Michelle saying like, oh, you guys had some help. And then people took that to mean that they threw the challenge. And then later he clarified that they didn't. I mean, I get that they wouldn't want to go into a swap with Tyson if they could avoid it. But I just don't know if I see that being the case. I mean, like, do we have any like concrete tweets back and forth either way of like,
no, I think, kind of I think I've seen outside of that sort of reading between the lines, I've seen people sort of watch the challenge and be like, oh, well, Tyson's really swimming, but it doesn't seem like anyone else is swimming. I really do feel like during Game Changers, when they threw that challenge to get rid of Sandra, they were very vocal about it. You know, I do feel like these Survivor players do not want to look foolish, especially in challenge performance on television. So if they were actually throwing it, I do believe they would say that. You know, I think people like Nick and Sarah would be like, oh, yeah, no, we were definitely throwing it to get rid of Tyson. Like, no question whatsoever. And I think the fact that they did not say that means that, no, they truly did not throw it. I think it was just a big, big choke at the end, which allowed, you know, I guess Selle to have their own pseudo inspirational moment as Adam Klein finally grabs his hall pass key.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So if that is the case and they did not throw it, that is some embarrassing puzzle performance. I'm just going to say it. That puzzle was not that hard. And you could solve it two ways because you could solve it upside down because it was symmetrical. So like, then that's bad on their part.
And, you know, maybe it was because the fact that neither Sandra nor Sophie was on that puzzle.
That's entirely possible. They should have said that they were going to throw it because I think it's more embarrassing to have done so poorly on the puzzle.
I'm loving this running theme of Wendell not being in the puzzle, but still screaming from the sideline, helping with the puzzle. Like Jeff pointed it out last week. He's like, Wendell really wants to get in there. And then this week again, it just felt like every other shot of the Red Tribe doing the puzzle was Wendell screaming at them to do this and that. I'm like, dude, just go in the puzzle next time.
I love Wendell, the hockey dad. I love him standing on the sidelines being like, come on, like that's a clear foul. Like you just let me step in there and do it. You know, like he's clearly sort of like backseat coaching from the sidelines, even though he technically can't participate in it. I also saw a secret scene of DeCall's tree mail where Wendell was like, I'm so glad it's a water challenge. Like we're going to kick ass in the water. So, yeah, I personally don't think there was any sort of fishiness going on, though. Who knows? You know, these people have unfortunately had a bit of radio silence as to it. Maybe we'll find out after the fact that, yeah, they were trying to get rid of Tyson because it was such a clean vote.
Yeah, maybe Wendell was participating in the challenges or trying to participate in the puzzle so much after that one time when he didn't win immunity because he forgot to call Jeff over.
He's overcompensating.
Yeah, exactly. And he's probably at the end of every time they finish a puzzle, Jeff. I would imagine.
Or he's like standing next to Jeff and like tapping him on the shoulder every time they get close.
Yeah, right. Like just preparing for when they do solve the puzzle.
Yeah, that's Wendell's job.
So Jeff is just paying extra attention. Yep, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, let's get into Tyson. Speaking of Tyson, because here he goes to Edge of Extinction. Who knows? He may be coming back soon, but he gets sent out pretty handily here. Even though he is stunned, it's a pretty consensus thing for the tribe. So much so that there's this really sad scene where he's like, great, Nick, it's an easy vote, right? It's an easy vote. Everyone's going for Nick. And then he walks away and everyone's like, poor Tyson doesn't even realize we're all ganging up on him. But Liana, you know, we obviously talked about him a bit in our preseason draft back in June. But as the preseason began to crystallize closer to the premiere, how did you think Tyson was going to do, especially with the advent of EOE and the fire tokens?
Okay, so here's what I said for Tyson. I said that he would continue to spread those preseason rumors, which proved to be effective in sowing mistrust. He mentions actual, factual, and or bolt hole in a confessional. He is the first person to try to buy an advantage off of someone with fire tokens. And I said that he would get 69 fire tokens.
Nice.
And he would have 34 confessionals. His ally would be Jeremy and his enemy would be Tony. So I was so wrong on pretty much everything.
Interesting. So, I mean, I also feel like it would be someone like Tyson to purposely end on 69 fire tokens.
Yeah, exactly. Like that, he was aiming for that.
So I decided, especially when it came, you know, Leon and I said, we're not going to make any predictions in terms of placements because Edge of Extinction futzes with everything. So let's just make a winner pick. And you know what? After my draft, I felt really nervous about picking Tyson, you know, first in my team, second overall. You three were balking at me. But then in the preseason, I was looking at all this positivity about Tyson. So I'm like, okay, I feel good about this. And it could still come to pass. But for at the moment, my winner pick, Tyson Apostle, has been voted out. I said he'd get given the most stuff by people on Edge of Extinction. I guess whether that meant like the fire tokens or whether that meant people selling him stuff just because he has all these friends. I said he'd vote someone out after taking their advantage, Sierra Dawn Thomas style. If it was Sarah Lucina, that'd be all the more pertinent. And I said, I guess true to what you said, Liana, he would be very capable and would spread a bunch of lies and misinformation to turn the tribe against each other. I said his closest ally was Yule and his biggest enemy was Sandra. And I said 70 confessionals and I think 10 fire tokens or something like that by the end.
Okay, yeah. So, I mean, you had him as your winner pick, right? So obviously he was going to go deep into the game. So, wow, yeah. What a world that would have been. Could we live in that world?
It could still happen again.
That's true.
I just love that Tyson's legacy on this season. I mean, obviously it's not finished yet. We don't know how it's going to go forward from here. But at this point, he has now been voted out. But just from like the super fan level of like where we are within the RHAP community to have this and like, you know, a year from now that we'll be able to look back and also have the News AF podcasts from when Tyson was gone filming and just have all of those where people were confused. People were questioning themselves, their lives, their things that they learned and everything. And then some people like that knew about it, of course, we were having fun listening along to the clips of Tyson in there. That's just like a whole other level of like part of this season that I think is going to be so fun to look back on.
Yeah, talk about inside jokes.
Like, I'm so amazing. Glad that they ended up doing that. At the time, I was like, this is kind of stupid. And then as it went on, I was like, you know what? This is funny. This is actually funny that like they went really hard with it. They did a lot of planning and it was good. And just quickly, my thoughts on Tyson were that before the season, I felt pretty good about him. I think I had him definitely at least in my top five of my preseason power rankings. But then after the first episode, I was, you know, obviously we saw that he was on right. the outs. But my first thought was just, all right, this season, we saw Natalie going out first. I said, you know what? The people that are the likable ones around camp, the people that are making you laugh, they are going to have absolutely no luck this season using that skill in particular to get far in the game. This game is going to be only about connections, who knows who, and all that kind of stuff. It has nothing to do with the traditional, like, Tyson or Natalie gameplay, like I said, of keeping people laughing and all that. That's not going to help them at all. And of course, as we see, they're both already gone. So,
well, ironically enough, you talk about, you know, it's going to come down to who knows who, but Tyson, and this is what he was trying to pitch, sort of got taken out by an alliance of people who don't know anybody else. It's so interesting. And it's like the complete opposite of Blood versus Water, right? In Blood versus Water, Tyson was part of those group of unconnected individuals being like, okay, we have to gang up on the pairs in this game, the people that know each other, because then they're going to take us out. And then the exact opposite happened here, where he's like, we're the people who know each other, who have connections. We have to join up together or else these unconnected individuals are going to take us out. I should know. I was one of them.
Yeah,
it's like he's a good Survivor player. It's crazy.
Almost just like that.
Yeah, no, that was really good. And it's neat to see those parallels. And I love that point, Matt, about the fact that essentially the skill set that you have, if you are a social player, because of the players that you're playing with, essentially that is like a null and void benefit because everybody's such a good player and because everybody's so smart. It's also been really interesting to see how these winners are playing because it almost is like encapsulates what is maybe the ideal strategy, which is to kind of lay low, easy consensus boots in the beginning, right? That's what everybody seems to be trying to be doing. Apart from, you know, we've seen more from the blue tribe, obviously they're sort of playing a little bit faster, but since we saw red tribe go to tribal council, you know, they really were playing for the swap. They were playing to make peace. And so it's interesting that, you know, that's a strategy that they've adopted early.
Well, the strategy on DeKal has essentially been get rid of anyone who knows Boston Rob.
Right.
which is what the third out of five votes has been around Boston Rob, which is just insane. Again, say what you want to about the man's legacy and his stature in the Survivor community, but the fact that they're taking, you know, people out around him just for the pure idea of them joining up with him and working with him later on is astounding to me. And what he's been able to do is like, I saw this get tweeted out. I feel like it's almost, I mean, it's not exactly a one-for-one comparison to Sandra and Game Changers, but I guess similarly, it's one of those things of like, wow, Rob has been on borrowed time right now. And the fact that he makes it day after day without getting a huge target on him or getting his torch snuffed is pretty damn miraculous.
You know, it's one thing to come in this season with a legacy of being Boston Rob, of being like one of, if not the biggest, you know, well-known characters in Survivor history. It's another thing that they all came out there and saw his head on a huge statue right when they were doing preseason press. So, you know, this was always going to play out like this and, you know, hard to be any kind of surprised.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, would you say, Mike, that he's playing with house money at this point?
I mean, I kind of think so. Like, I do not think over my head into the water. I fell. I couldn't grab the key and I just drenched myself instead. But yes, he'll go all in. But I feel like he's losing any sort of good. He's losing all his chip stacks, essentially. Like, I feel like he's going into this swap very short stacked. But who knows, knowing his luck this season, it's going to end up being like a super good swap for him. Like, it'll be the Cele majority and he'll be able to be like, all right, I guess we'll keep everything together. And then somehow, some way, Boston freaking Rob is going to make the merge and it's going to be incredible.
Good. Mm-hmm. He's my last hope of my all-star trio. Two of them are already gone. And now, you know, Rob's doing the work for that I need somebody to do, protecting Parvati as much as possible. So I need him around as long as we can get him.
Operation Protect Parvati. I love that.
That's the goal.
Oh boy. All right. Well, let's start getting into our games here. Because while Yule said that he does not do math this season, I'm going to make you guys do some math. This is a game I like to call By the Numbers. Not just the 20 trips of the logs that were going on this episode, but lots of numbers happening over the course of episode 4 of Survivor. It's a pretty simple game. I'm going to ask you a question. The answer is going to be a number. I'm going to have you each write down a number, and whoever's closest is going to get the point for that question. So we'll see how keen your skills of observation are.
Okay, that sounds good. Okay, I'm ready.
Are you getting a pad of paper?
I have a little notepad. I have written down here 12 minutes. Does anybody know what that means? What happened to 12 minutes?
The Edge of Extinction segment. The Edge of Extinction segment was about 10 to 12 minutes, I think.
But do you know if this is linked to this episode, or did you just write down? Maybe you wrote down 12 o'clock instead. Like, maybe you were supposed to do something at noon.
No, I wrote, well, this is from previously. I wrote down 12 minutes. Like, I wrote mins, 12 mins, 12 mins. Maybe it's not minutes. Man, this is a mystery. Quite a mystery. I'm going to keep this posted just in case.
Yeah. Who's the mysterious 12 minutes?
Mr. 12 minutes. Oh, man. Get Nancy Drew over here. Call up the Hardy Boys. We got a mystery on our hands.
Mr. 12 minutes was my nickname in college.
Oh, my God.
Full bloom.
All right, here we go. So again, we'll have you both write down an answer for each question. We'll use the honor system here. There's no honor among thieves on Survivor, but it seems like we are going with an honor and a Jervis for this one. So again, the answer is just going to be a straight up number. So use your best guesstimation. Here we go. So on day 10, Yule decides to greet the day by hugging and or like shaking the shoulders of a good amount of the DeKal tribe members. How many people did we see Yule embracing to start the day?
How did I not notice Yule being so touchy-feely or friendly?
He was walking around. He was like patting people on the shoulders and stuff.
Yeah, I love friendly Yule. He reminds me of like, that's a very boss thing, right? Of him being like, I got to invigorate, you know, motivation, positivity in my coworkers. So let me like walk down the cubicle and being like, Bob, how's the wife doing? And like, you know, starting up conversations at the coffee maker.
The water cooler, if you will. Exactly. What a good manager.
All right, so Matt, what's your number here?
I guess I'll keep it low. I can't imagine he was going to everybody in the tribe, right? Like, and he's not going anywhere near Tyson and Kim. That's putting a target on his back. So that brings us down to 6 options, maybe, because not including him. I'll go with 4.
I also said 4.
And you were both right on the money. The correct answer is 4.
Teamwork makes the dream work.
Yeah, so he embraced Nick. He shook Tony on the shoulder as Tony was sleeping. He hugged Kim and he hugged Sophie as well.
He
and
did hug Kim. Interesting.
Yeah, so maybe he's crossing party lines. It's not Instamatic yet, so he can still hug the enemies.
Oh, they can all change their names to Matt. But he's trying to bring Kim in, right? So
yeah,
maybe
he's
that
trying to bring
part,
Kim in with him
reason.
I wonder if he knew about the, again, we won't be able to talk with him about it until much, much later, but I wonder if he knew about the whole half idol thing. Did we ever get, because I don't think Sophie ever returned the half idol to Kim like Adam did with Denise.
She did not. No, they definitely would have said something if that was the case. And Kim was very interesting to me to be watching this episode because like maybe you caught it and I didn't. I don't know. Did she say any words at all besides like to Sarah? Like she didn't have a confessional or maybe
no,
she did.
She was
very quiet.
Yeah, there was a secret. Well, maybe there was a reason so because there was a secret scene that apparently Kim's been struggling a little bit with homesickness now that she's
okay.
She left 3 kids behind, which was very different from her situation the last time out. She actually has a really beautiful confessional about how last time she was super strategic and now she's like quote unquote letting herself be more emotional and more vulnerable. But I think maybe just between that and just not being really affiliated with the main decision makers apparently in the tribe, it was not a purple episode surprisingly for Kim Sproglin.
It just felt like every single scene was Kim looking in on a conversation, looking sad. And I was like, I really want to give her a hug.
She did look really sad. I caught
every
that
scene,
too. Even
she
the
was
one,
just, yeah.
Even oh, the one with that you mentioned with Sarah was she was like, yeah, I'm in. And I was like, Kim, let me help you.
So should we call her Kim Sadlin this season?
And then it was even more crushing at the very end when obviously Tyson goes out and doesn't give his fire token to her. I was like, come on, dude.
Well, Kim really, did say really that she were, you know, she was starstruck by a lot of people, but she didn't outright mention Tyson. I think that was really her folly here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because he was going for the idolatry of it all.
Yes, exactly. You have to say that it's your hero and then it's he'll like, give you.
Like, he knew that she was on the outs, and like, Tyson wants to cause chaos. That's Tyson's game, you know, or that's his lifestyle of trying to, you know, stir the pot a little bit. And the fact that he didn't give it to the one person on the outs, I was like, oh.
Well, considering his first option was to try to swallow it, I don't, yes. You know, I don't know. But
all right, let's go to the next question here. What is the number on Danny's jersey?
Oh my god. I have no idea. Okay.
I might be disqualified from this question because
does he know?
I have a picture of her right in front of me.
No, Matt!
Peter.
I didn't mean to. How was I supposed to know?
All right, well, we'll call this question a wash, but Liana, give me a guess of what you think the number is.
7.
No, it's 2.
Oh.
And I wasn't sure if it's like tongue in cheek to the fact that like this is her second time out, because clearly it's like a custom jersey, right? It's bedazzled. I think it says Danny Girl on
Danny
it.
Danny Girl. Yeah. Imagine yeah, wearing maybe. That for a whole season of Survivor. It's just quite the outfit.
Yeah, it is quite the outfit. That and then her hat as well.
Yeah, I wonder if like only she could get away with it. Like, I'm sure if a future contestant for like season 41 or 42 is like, Jeff, I want to wear my Letterman's jacket from JV football on the island. He'd be like, absolutely not. Get the hell out of here.
Oh, my God. I'm trying to get rid of some clothes, making space. And I have so much of my high school lacrosse stuff because it's like good quality jackets. But I'm like, where am I going to wear like my boathouse jacket?
So you like what was the because we had. We didn't have Letterman's jacket. We more so had like Letterman's windbreakers, which were like just very light jackets with our school colors. We never actually had like the stereotypical heavy jackets that you'd associate with athletes.
Well, did you guys have pins? Like, did they give you pins?
No.
Because I would say, like, where would you put that on your windbreaker? Yeah, that's so stylish.
No, it would just be like, it would have, you know, the name of the sport, I guess, printed on, like, the back, I think. And then you get your name embroidered on the front. So I don't know if you want, like, an embroidered windbreaker. That just feels weird.
Can we make that the official attire of the B&B?
An embroidered windbreaker? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Why the hell not?
I'll buy one.
Yay.
Count me in. First purchase.
Add it to our Rourke shark tank.
Yeah, but the bad news is that the only to save on embroidery, we're only going to have the name Matt be sewn on.
Yes.
So much like Instamatic, you have to be nicknamed Matt to buy the windbreaker.
It's getting better and better.
it's Matt themed. Oh my god, this is an amazing idea.
All right, next question: on what number trip of the 20 did Ethan get attended to by medical?
I think I know that one.
I think I know this
one. All right,
too.
Liana, what do you think it is?
16.
Matt?
I also have 16.
Wow, you're killing. You both are killing it. 16, sweet 16 is correct.
Hooray. Yeah, because I remember him saying that he only had 4 left. And then I did the math. So.
All right, next question. In Rob's conversation with Michelle, which is so interesting on its own level, how many times did he swing that ring?
That's a good question. It's a lot.
It's a lot.
All right.
All right, Matt, what'd you put down?
I went with 13.
Liana?
I went with 7.
Liana, you keep on keeping on. Exactly 7 is the correct answer.
Oh my god.
Felt like a lot more than that.
Wow. Well, that's just what we saw. You know, the edit never shows everything.
Right. And well, that's the weird thing about that scene is when it completes it, he's like, good game to Michelle. But it seemed like she had no partaking in that game whatsoever.
Yeah, I didn't think that they were playing against each other. I just thought Boston Rob was just playing the ring game.
Unless, actually, he did this a couple episodes, right? Like, he swung the ring and hit it, and then he, like, high-fived Adam. So maybe it's that Rob wants someone to stand beside him and observe him swing this ring, and then he could promptly, like, celebrate with them after he lands it.
It's like the new hammock, you know, he's just going to play the game. And then, yeah, you get to celebrate with people. There's some camaraderie that gets built after he hits it. I don't know. It makes sense. He's a genius. All right. So I believe it.
That was a great moment. I loved him reaffirming Michelle about, you know, here, win's a win. You deserved everything that you've accomplished in this game. And I appreciated that so much. So if he wants to just keep hyping up all the great people while he's playing his games, that's great.
Oh, no, loved that scene so much because it's one of those things where, you know, there are so many moments and scenes in this season that are so baked in Survivor, you know, canon of like, if you don't know their history, it makes the scene fine, but knowing the meaning behind it makes it even better. And that Michelle is one of the most controversially received winners ever, but people might not remember that before Boston Rob was a winner, he was one of the most controversially received runner-ups ever. He was somebody who was told, like, for a while between seasons 8 and 22, you should have won instead of Amber, your wife didn't deserve it, all she did was cling on to your coattails. And so not only is he used to, like, being on the receiving end of that argument, but also supporting someone who is getting that type of flack from the fandom. And while the fandom in 2004 was extremely different from the fandom in 2016, I can imagine he sympathizes with Michelle. And I'm glad that he, you know, mused that. I'm sure it's not going to make up for just the emotional turmoil that Michelle went through after that happened, but it's always good. I can't imagine from her, like, how great it was to hear from, especially one of the greatest players, like, I don't give a shit. Like, you should celebrate the fact that you're a winner. We're all winners here, no matter what. Who the hell cares how we're ranked?
This is why I was so pumped for this season, to see people that I think are so fascinating interact with each other. And this conversation between Boston Rob and Michelle, I mean, to co-sign everything that you guys are saying, then just to add on top of it, the fact that, you know, these two people that have gone through such unique stories in their lives, and it's just, oh, it's so fascinating. And to watch them interact, like, I really just want them all to, like, talk and hang out. Oh my God, if live feeds could exist for this season, I would pay so much money for that because, like, amazing.
Like, we need like a full reunion of this. Like, we can't just have another one of those 20-minute segments or something. Like, I want the full stage, like, you know, of talking to all these people. I don't know if they're going to be talking to each other. You know, the reunion is mostly talking to Probst, but, like, I want to see all of these people up on stage and just talking about this experience, like the show and all this stuff. Like, I want the full hour, which, you know, we're not going to get because we're going to end up with, like, a full 20-person finale, and then we have to get through 100 people voting on the jury and all that stuff. So I want a lot more than we're getting.
Right. Well, I would just love to get, like, I mean, we've gotten this a little bit, especially with that panel that happened at the premiere screening, but I would just love to hear more of these people talk about Survivor and specifically, like, the fan community side of things, because that's another interesting element of this. It almost ties into the Poker Alliance of it all, that the show, and maybe its hands are tied a bit in this season, but it's really more and more embraced, like, the more meta outside aspects of the show. Like, this is one of the first times I can remember where a player is coming in saying, like, I know I'm remembered for this, or I was regarded as this. Whereas previously, when people return, they're more so talking about, like, the game they played out on the island, not necessarily how the fandom responded to them in turn.
Mm-hmm. As long as they're talking to each other, I just like a panel of some sort. I'm doing the Adam Klein marriage hand motion.
Panel.
Like, they're talking to
conference.
Each other.
Conference.
Talking. Yes. Amazing. Oh, fantastic.
Before we move on to more fun and games, we're going to take a quick break to listen to a word from our sponsors. And we are back. So let's keep on keeping on. All right. Next question. Speaking of Adam, so we saw his little, like, workhorse strategy trying to get back in good with everybody, or at least the majority. So there's one shot of Adam carrying a huge bundle of wood. How many pieces of wood is Adam carrying from what we're visibly able to see? And yes, I did count these.
Oh, Lord.
We got 5,000 hours of television on a week and Mike's counting pieces of wood.
And a 10-month-old son.
And a 10-month-old son.
Well, it's not, he couldn't count the wood, so someone had to. All right, Liana, what'd you write down?
Oh, Lord. I'm going to go with 10.
Matt?
I'll go with lucky number 7.
I counted probably about 21 pieces of wood at least in there. So, Liana, the point's yours once more.
Oh, man, this is, I don't know. This is getting a little, I mean, I know I get the point and I'm very happy for that, but like, what defines a piece of wood? You got to go back. Like, I don't know.
The question
listen,
really
I've been on multiple episodes of This Week in Survivor History. I know now not to question the hosts and their judgment. It's
the big mysteries of life. Who is 12 minutes? What constitutes a piece of wood and more?
Wow, really hitting it hard this week.
Yeah, Liana's book of life will be sold with every B&B windbreaker that we sell.
Yeah, in addition to the addendum to the Ron Clark rules, we're really just stocking up over here.
I really like that. We'll sell Ron Clark's book and then we'll just staple like a handheld pamphlet of our 14 rules we came up with on there.
Yeah, my original plan was just to print out a bunch of pieces of paper, go to bookstores, and then just shove in or libraries and just stick in the page in the back.
I love this. I love this like guerrilla warfare on Ron Clark's book because the mainstream literature media won't let us hear out about the true Ron Clark rules. Like, always have Joey Amazing on your team.
Exactly. These are wise words of wisdom that really need to be shared.
All right. Next question. Selle finally won another challenge, and they actually got their first reward in the form of egg-laying chickens. How many chickens did Selle win?
That happened this week?
That happened this week.
Where was I?
Uh-oh. all right. Okay. I have my number.
All right, Matt, what'd you think?
I feel like in general, they usually get three, but these are all winners. So I'll go with they got four.
I also had four.
You are both on the money. Four is correct. Though I'm assuming it might have been three by the time they got back to Ken, because I'm assuming Jeremy let one go again.
Twinning.
Well, they also did just see Edge of Extinction, so maybe they were fearful that someone would want to pull a big Wendy and release the chickens to get, you know, recognition.
They're here for that Sia money. That's the other thing I'd like to see the contestants talk about. If we can add that to our panel, I would like that.
How do you typify Adam Klein voice in writing? You know, like, is it a bold? Is it an italicized? Is it a specific font?
I think it's italicized.
Okay.
I think you just capitalize the first couple letters of the word.
And then just leave the rest lowercase.
Right.
Like how many letters? Is it a fixed number?
Do first syllable all caps and then second and subsequent syllables lowercase.
Yeah, okay. That works for me.
Okay, good.
You want me to type up the entire set of power rankings this week like that?
Yeah, exactly. And all Adam Klein type.
All right. Yes. I'll work on it.
All right. So as we saw, even though Selle did win those four chickens, it was a tough, tough road. How many times do we see a Selle member grab and miss the key?
Selle member.
Okay.
You were going to say how many times do we see?
No. So because the only one we saw from DeKalb, we saw Sophie miss once, but that's it. Otherwise, they kicked butt. But Selle missed a number of times. Part of it may have been due to Tony's witchcraft, but they missed a lot.
Oh, that was so funny. The, yeah, fall or whatever he said.
Yeah, fall, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, wait, sorry. What, I forgot my question. What Selle is red?
Blue.
Sorry, that's so much.
Dude, you're undergoing an earthquake while you're saying those colors.
I'm practicing my Adam Klein voice. Okay, all right,
Liana, what are you thinking?
Well, seven, sure.
Ooh, I went with eight.
Liana is correct.
Oh my god,
was it legit? Was it actually seven?
It was seven on the money. Denise missed once, Parvati missed three times, and Adam missed three times before he finally had his big Suri moment and grabbed the cake.
Adam missed three times. What, did they slow it down to make it look like seven or something?
Yeah, no, that's the thing. I totally thought Adam had more, but no, he had the same number of misses as Parvati. It was just, to your point, Matt, a bit more dragged out, like they had him arduously climbing the ladder again. Of course, it makes sense, because then he has this, like, we can poke fun at Adam all we want, but I thought the confessional after the challenge was, like, so beautiful. I thought it was so, so beautiful.
Of course, yeah.
No, it was really good. The one about when Adam sets his mind to something.
Yeah, but he was, you know, quoting his mom.
Aww, yeah,
he was saying something about his teacher told that to his mom, or his mom told that to his teacher. I was like, yeah, I don't want my mom or my parents talking to my teachers back then. They those conversations never went well.
Aww, were you a problem child?
Matt does not stop talking. Yeah. Like, my mom, we get it.
I remember my mom told my third grade teacher, Mike has to stop peeing his pants. And I took that with me every day.
I'm so sorry. I don't think I have any good ones that I can remember. But
well, no,
I remember,
that was not an, just to clarify, that was not an actual memory. That was a joke. I did not actually pee my pants in third grade.
Oh, I believed it.
Oh, I believed it as well. I'm glad that you clarified.
No, I was doing
it. I believed it.
It was a pun, or it was a take on the Adam Klein confessional. I was urine free in the classroom for quite some time at that point.
You know, it's okay, Mike. It's fine. You can open up to us.
We're
only recording for the $75.
In third grade.
Oh, I'm going to buy you some Depends. But my mom, when she, one of her teachers told, so my grandmother, her mom, that it's like Marsha can't keep her hands to herself. And she apparently was always like wanting to like hug the other children and like be everybody's like.
Oh, so your mom was, yeah, Yul Kwan.
Yes, my mom was Yul Kwan.
Well, day 10, everybody. Let's hug it out.
Yeah, we need to remember these times, not just war.
Exactly. Let's eat our just weird fish and learn about math.
Yeah.
All right. How many times was the word facade said in this episode?
Is this a trick question?
Facade was said at least once, so it was not a trick question.
Okay. I do not remember this at all. Okay.
All right. What do you think, Liana?
So, I'm going to go with 4.
Matt?
3.
Oh, wow.
Liana, this is your game. I think you got nearly every question right. 4 is the correct answer.
Wow. I should go buy a lotto ticket today, you guys.
Yeah, this is your lucky day. I think it'd be more so like if you didn't realize you were buying a lotto ticket. Because apparently you're just backing into these answers without even knowing the exact numbers behind them.
So yeah. Who said it so many times?
It was Sophie. Sophie said it because Sophie was the one. She brought it up during the whole we went to prison in our high school scene, which was really, really funny. She brought it up at tribal council. Jeff repeated it and then she brought it up again.
Who said it?
Sophie.
Sophie.
Who?
Oh, yeah. You forgot her name. That's how under the radar she is.
Oh, right. Yeah, I know her.
Yeah, props for Tyson for clocking that whole group. That was really great.
I don't know. Do you think that was like that was not purposeful, right? Like he legitimately forgot her name and then decided to just roll with it?
I would not be surprised. I mean, he probably like thought to himself at one point while he was out there, like, I keep forgetting her name. And then by the time he got to that confessional, he was like, wait a second, I might have actually forgotten it. So I wouldn't be surprised.
I believe it.
Well, congratulations, Liana. You have become a prodigy in By the Numbers. You really have become the John Nash of the B&B. So congratulations on a well-deserved win. Matt, as a consolation prize, you will get your customary B&B windbreaker with your name inscribed.
Oh, perfect.
Can the universe use my luck in a different way for something more productive? Like, no offense, Mike, I'm happy to have won. I'm very honored, but I don't know, maybe something more useful. Not that this isn't useful, knowing how many logs Adam Klein is carrying around, but still.
Yeah, actually, he was carrying one more piece than the EOE people did, so maybe he could have beasted that challenge if he was on the edge with them.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Like walking up and down that hill, that's so gruesome. Ugh, man. Oh, yeah,
I can imagine. Like again, you could say what you want to about the time it took, but just to hear their own sort of like journey through it emotionally of them realizing that this was definitely not what they expected was fun. You know, it was reminiscent of Reem and Keith going to that rice bucket for the first time back in season 38 and just realizing that they are in for hell.
Mm-hmm. Like we have to do this every day.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, speaking of Adam, were we speaking of Adam? I don't know. Yeah, sure. Whatever. My discussion question, I want to talk about Adam's strategy after he was blindsided, right? So he was left out of the vote by his alliance members. And then we got, you know, this whole segment of him working really hard around camp. And then you got the confessionals. Oh, Jeremy saying he needs to, he's working now. He needs to babysit, blah, 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 all that stuff. But what do you guys think is the actual best strategy? Is Adam acting ideally here, or is there something else that he could have done? Because I feel like I don't know exactly what the clear answer is.
It's tough because, like, you would think maybe saving face with the group is what you want to do, but it really does seem like Boss and Rob was very easily able to be like, Adam, talk to me. I can't believe this kid did it. And they're like, oh, all right, I'm done with Adam at this point. So, like, considering, I guess, the hole he had dug for himself last episode, he would have had to do something like incredibly amazing to not have Rob come up to them and for them to not actually believe him.
Or he should have, I don't know, treated Rob and Parv like, you know, they have the coronavirus, like just to, you know, go nowhere near them. That's topical. I get a reference.
Yeah. But then, and then just don't touch your face when you're around them.
Don't cough. Yeah. Get the hand sanitizer from production. Because, yeah, you just should avoid them. Like, if they ever try to walk up to you, just run away. Pretend like there's an restraining order. Like, do not go near them.
Oh, I like that. Like, always have, like, make sure there's another person there with you at the same time. Yes. Like, you make your own buddy system.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought that Adam, coming back to camp, I mean, obviously he put himself in a spot where he thought, you know, he was going to get away with being able to play both sides while, you know, keeping his allies happy, while also the strategy he was trying to implement of telling Rob and Ethan what the plan was. You know, obviously he wanted Parvati out, and he hasn't really spoken a word to Parvati. So interesting to see him go over to talk to them. It's tough to see where he goes from here. I feel like he's got the pieces around him. Like, the right people have all been going out of the game so far, where, you know, he wasn't really, or okay, not maybe not so much Ethan, but like Natalie and Danny, they weren't doing much for his game. But he still has Michelle. He still has Denise all around him, but it still feels like his game is nowhere near the spot where he would want it to be going into a swap. I mean, he's got tons of people by his side that should be his allies. But after the way he's been playing, people might be willing to sacrifice him a little sooner than he would have hoped for.
Yeah, and it's also interesting to think about, because the winners so far have been playing a little bit consensus boot driven, if that is going to stay now that we're going into a swap, or is now this going to be the time where the Boston Robs, the Sandras, is this when they start to go? I don't know. I think Adam Klein could easily survive until merge. It's almost like he's so discounted, just whatever. No one will listen to Adam. No one will play with Adam. We're going to treat him like he's got the coronavirus.
Topical and, again.
Nailing it. And then he's able to make it far. I don't know. I liked his apology tour and then the working around camp. I'm just, you know, if you're Adam and you get left out of the vote by your allies, like, what do you do? And it's like he was left out by his allies and the counter plan against his original plan. Yeah. He was left out of. So he's like completely screwed.
He was left out of two plans out of three total that were going on. And he was the only one in on his own plan. I also like when he was talking with Boston Rob and Parvati, they asked him if he was going to play puppy, which I've never heard that phrase. I've heard play possum, but I've never heard someone playing puppy.
How do you play puppy?
I don't know. You sort of like you roll around, you like do naughty things, like you take Boston Rob's shoes and chew them up.
Pee on the floor.
Listen, I did not do that in third grade, okay, Liana?
A tail between the legs, right? I think that's also like, oh, bashful, kind of.
Yeah, you have little needle teeth that hurt people.
I like that. That's one of the things that you associate with puppies.
Well, when we first had Lily, our dog, as a puppy, that's the way that Angela put them, is that she had little needle teeth, and when she was teething, when she would like bite down, it would hurt like the dickens. And now that Asher has started to teeth, we're lucky that he at least has human teeth instead of needle teeth.
Yeah. Does he have any teeth yet? When do babies get teeth?
He has one tooth. It's a weird time period. It's a little bit like I don't know why I was going to say it's a little bit like Edge of Extinction in the mouth, but I'm going to put that phrase out there. It's a little bit like Edge of Extinction in the mouth. where your teeth might come back at any point in time.
I gotta go.
I'm gonna write that down. Where's that post-it note that's got 12 minutes written on it?
Now we're gonna come back to another podcast. Like, why did I write Edge of Extinction in the mouth below 12 minutes?
Yeah, let's see. It's a little bit like Edge of Extinction in the mouth. Can we put that on our windbreakers?
Yep, it's gonna be on the quote on the back.
Yeah, I need a new quote for my quote board. I think this might be it.
Mike, do you see any other similarities between Adam Klein and Lily Puppy Dog? Lily Bloom Puppy Dog?
Yes, thank you for plugging her Instagram word? Handle, her Instamatic handle.
I'm trying to remember.
Matt Bloom Puppy Dog. I would say that, you know, I have a Yorkshire Terrier who is usually one of the barkier types, and I could say that Adam was a bit barky last episode with him feeling like he overstepped his boundaries a bit, and he talked a lot and he got caught from it. But this, you know, as opposed to the barking when you get a sense of danger, this was more so barking to like get someone's attention, to get someone to do what you want them to do. And you know, while I have gave my dog the nuggets that she so fiercely craves every time she barks at me, they did not give Adam the votes that he needed.
Mm-hmm. Nuggets. Is that what you call dog food? Nuggets?
No, we have these freeze-dried chicken nuggets that she really likes, so she eats them as well. We pamper our dog and our no longer needle teeth.
That's cute.
Her teeth got off the edge of extinction.
That's sure. All right, okay. All right, that's enough. That's enough of that.
Let's play puppy with that segment.
Let's play puppy. I'm talking about puppies. This week, I was really inspired by all of the, well, I took away Greek mythology references. So the Sisyphean task of having to go up and down the hill to get the logs, the tribe members pulling the boat like it was a chariot of some sort. And then we talked about idols at tribal council. So what I did for this week is I put together some Mad Libs, Greek mythology style, but we're going to make them Survivor Greek mythology. It'll work, I promise.
Before we get into, because you reminded me with the people pulling the boat like a chariot, wasn't there an interview with John Kierhofer where they said he was going to bring back classic challenges?
Yeah, I heard that.
But was this from anything, any previous season? Because I don't remember this challenge whatsoever.
The puzzle is, I don't know, I can give you that.
Right, yeah, because Nick Wilson won, as we were reminded several times.
Yeah, but I don't remember the challenges where the players were like sea lions dragging the boat to the next station.
It was amazing. I don't know who had that idea, because it was a new idea, because I also do not remember it from a previous Survivor challenge. But that was really great. It was really great. It was really weird. Very weird, but great.
All right, go on with your Survivor Greek myths.
Okay, all right. I was obsessed with Greek myths as a kid, so I tried to write some of these from memory, so we'll see how it goes. And first, we're just going to learn all about the Greek gods, and then we're going to rewrite the Prometheus myth. Blech. So I don't know if any of you are familiar with Greek mythology. I'm like really into it.
I was really into it in middle school. I remember it was one of the units that we studied, and it was something that like got me really interested in the God of War games after those came out, and I did not realize those were accurate. Got me interested in the Disney movie Hercules. So, yeah, there's a lot of like Greek mythology affiliated paraphernalia and pop culture items that helped me sort of at least flesh out interpretations of these myths.
Okay, well, hopefully you can add this to your list. So we are going to be needing a lot of Survivor players. So that's going to be something I ask for a lot, just as an FYI. But I think let's keep it limited to the Survivor players on this season, okay? Because we're talking about it's all winners, guys. It's all winners.
All right.
So Mike, you'll start, and I need a Survivor from this season.
Let's go with our man, Adam.
Okay, Adam. Matt, I need a noun.
A noun. Oh my God. I'm going to turn into what's her face from Annalise. Big Brother. Yeah. Person, place, or thing.
Yeah.
So should I pick a person and then have it only be survivors as every answer?
Yeah, sure.
Can I pick Denise Stapley so she gets some airtime this week?
Yeah, you can pick Denise. Okay. Mike, I need a verb.
All right. Well, we can't turn survivor players into verbs. So I'm going to go with Belittle.
Okay. Matt, I need a Survivor player.
Oh, I'm good at this. Let's go with Michelle Fitzgerald.
I need a Survivor player.
Let's go with the queen, Sandra. Let's see if she becomes the queen of the gods.
Okay, Sandra. I need an animal. Do you know what an animal is?
I think so.
Those things the Survivor players eat sometimes.
Can I be very specific and say a puppy dog?
Yes, you can say a puppy dog.
Puppy dog it is.
Puppy dog. I need another Survivor.
Let's go with Kim Sadlin.
Aw. I need a noun.
We're going with another player. Let's go with Natalie Anderson.
You're going to eat. Okay. I need a body part.
Ooh, let's go with tongue. Which I would say is like the hill of the edge of extinction of the mouth.
Okay, let's just move on from that. I need a verb ending in L-Y.
Verbs don't end in L-Y.
I need a word that ends in L-Y.
Mike, help.
Wait, what... What ends in L-Y?
Adverbs.
Adjectives? I need an adverb that ends in L-Y. Thank you very much.
Just take an adjective, Matt, and add L-Y to the end of it.
An adjective describes things, right?
Yes.
Guys, I swear to God, I'm turning into I'm freaking out, sweating a little bit. Like, she was onto something when she said it's been a while.
Oh Lord. Okay. All right. Okay. Let's go for an easier one. I can do this. Okay. Do you want a survivor? Because I also need a survivor player.
I want a survivor. That's all I can do.
Okay. A survivor player, Matt. That's all you need. Okay. God,
this is so embarrassing. a survivor player.
Okay. And then I'll do the LY one.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Let's go with Wendell Holland.
I need a adverb ending in L-Y.
Giddily.
And I need another Survivor player.
Matt?
We're still sticking to just this season. Who else is on this season?
You can pick other people at this point.
How about Tina Wesson?
Okay. And last thing I need is a noun.
Mother.
Please, mother. Yeah, please don't make a Survivor player. All righty. Let me just plug in a few things because I have to repeat these names. This totally makes sense. All right. Here we go. Here's our story of the Survivor Greek gods. High atop Mount Olympus sat the survivor gods. Adam Klein sat on the highest throne with a bucket of Denise Staples beside him.
Oh no.
it was lightning bolts, and now it's Denise Staples.
A bucket of Denise Staples.
I just imagine a bunch of little ones, you know. Because he'll throw them later. Anyway, okay. On his right sat Michelle Fitzgerald, his wife. But Michelle was a very jealous
wife. Do you think Michelle would feel about being swapped on a tribe with her husband?
Ooh, that's right. I don't know. Very dramatic. Even Adam, who was afraid of nothing, feared her belittles of rage. One day, Adam was down on Earth marrying a mortal girl, Sandra. When Michelle found out, she stormed down to Earth, but Adam had turned Sandra into a puppy dog.
Aww. And so Sandra loves puppies, so she could join all her Pomeranians.
Yay!
Adam Klein also had many children, including Kim Spradlin, the goddess of wisdom, who was born out of Adam Klein's tongue.
And ew.
And Tina Wesson, the god of Natalie Anderson. But Wendell Holland.
That's trippy. That's really trippy.
I don't even know how that works. But Wendell Holland, the goddess of love, had neither a mother nor a father. He emerged naked from the mother. That doesn't make sense.
What?
Because Aphrodite, the goddess of love, emerged naked from the sea.
But in this case, Wendell Holland had no mother or father, but he emerged from the stomach of the mother.
Naked from the mother.
Maybe it was someone named mother and not his mother.
Yes. Okay, sure.
So it's a mother, not his a, capital yeah. mother.
Right, from a mother. Most of the time, they all lived giddily together, but sometimes Adam had to reach for his Denise Stapleys and the survivor Olympians would fall to order. That's our learning about the Greek gods.
My God. My gods. There's so much to unpack there. Adam ruling the roost. I mean, he's far from playing puppy now. He's the big dog. Though he's two-typing his wife, Michelle Fitzgerald, by marrying puppy dog Sandra.
Mm-hmm.
Look, and if we could all have buckets of Denise Stapleys, we'd all be much better off.
We'd all be calmer. I think we would all just have better lives. I think that would be good.
Yeah, if you have the opportunity to throw Denise at anybody you want to.
Yeah, if you get mad. I love the fact that Adam's children include Kim Spradlin and Tina Wesson, the god of Natalie Anderson.
Yeah, let's unpack that. What does that mean exactly? Because I could see Natalie being the god of Tina Wesson because Tina came before Natalie. But what does Tina represent in terms of being the god of Natalie Anderson?
That means that Tina is on this season. Natalie is like when Natalie went out into the water in this episode, she was praying to her god of Tina Wesson, right? Or did I get that backwards?
I think it's back.
I might have gotten that backwards.
Well, I feel like the Olympians. No. I think it's usually like if the Olympians want like a bountiful harvest, they'll pray to Demeter. So I guess if we want like bountiful Natalie Anderson airtime, we pray to Tina.
So just know that anytime you see Natalie, she's playing for herself and Tina. Tina made it onto the season.
When
here.
Natalie gets a fire token, thank Tina Wesson is what we're saying.
Which makes sense. They were both first boosts of All-Star seasons.
Makes sense. I'll light my candle to Tina now. Because Natalie Anderson literally is the only hope I have of getting anywhere close to the number of fire tokens that I expected people would have. So really holding my hope out there for Natalie.
69 fire tokens, Tyson Apostle.
No, I think it's a far cry from the 409 from last week.
Yeah, I think 407 that Ethan was going to get. Again, I don't know what I was thinking.
You were picturing like a Mario Party board where they just walk and collect them as they like go. Every time you get to three spots ahead, you pick up plus three. And
right.
then, you know. It yeah. just doesn't seem to be going down like that just yet, but maybe. And then eventually we'll grab some item bags and those will be full of like plus 10.
I'm just excited for when they jump and they hit the brick to get to stop the die. Like,
oh,
that'll
no.
be fun.
Well, they're going to miss the brick, right? If we're looking at the Cele tribe.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
Denise misses the brick again.
Oh, man. Somebody took a really bad fall on that. Was that Nick who like hit the
No, it was when Adam
was Adam.
When Adam grabbed the key, his foot landed back on the balance beam, and then he fell into the water.
Oh, that was rough, man. Well, I mean, he is the highest throne seated survivor god.
Yeah, so he could survive it. Just put a couple of Denises on that, and he'll be okay.
That's right. All right, we have one more story to rewrite, and that is the myth of Prometheus, who stole fire for the humans on Earth.
Oh, yeah, I saw this story, right? Prometheus snuck into the Vokai camp late at night, and there was no fire, so he got ashes and then brought that back, and the god said, oh, that's okay. Here's your idol. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. He got help from Poseidon to put the ash on his face to sneak into the camp. Yes, I remember that very well. All right, so let's get into our version. Again, we're going to need some survivor players. So, Mike, kick things off with a survivor player.
Let's go with the aforementioned Boston Rob.
Boston Rob. And Matt, a survivor player.
I got to get the queen, Parvati Shallow, in here. That queen.
The queen. Okay. Mike, I need weather. Like, a form of weather.
Okay, let's go with hail.
Hail. I need an animal.
An animal.
Yes.
We've got those. Let's keep it in the family. We'll go with the chickens.
chickens. Mike, I need an animal.
Let's keep it out of the family and let's go with pterodactyl.
How do I spell pterodactyl? Whatever.
I mean, there's not going to be a spelling test.
Okay. I know there's a silent P at the beginning. I need a verb ending in ing. And yes, a verb.
Okay, I got this. Am I up?
Yes, you're up. All right.
Let's go with coughing, like everybody's doing outside right now.
Topical. I need a noun.
Tire.
Tire. I need another animal.
Ooh. Let's go with a lemur.
Lemur.
Lemurian.
Oh, a lemurian. I need an emotion.
Ooh, let's go with, I don't know why I thought constipation. That's not an emotion. We're going with it.
What? What? Okay.
It makes you emotional, I'm sure, but.
Sure. Okay. I need a number.
A number. Let's go with number two for our Danny boat ride over on Extinction.
I need a noun.
Let's go with calendar.
I need a body part.
Ooh, heard of those. Let's go with a appendix.
Guys, did I tell you I don't have my appendix anymore?
I remember you telling stories about like watching some show. I remember you watched like a
Big Brother.
It was Big Brother. Yeah, when you got your appendix taken out.
Yeah, I remember. That was a real surreal experience because I had done like a 40 mile bike ride or something before. And then sore for a fire token. Yeah. So we'd carry logs. It was very difficult. And then I thought I was just sore. And I continued being sore until I was very ill. And then finally went to my dad, like, Dad, I think I have to go to the hospital. And my appendix had ruptured.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. That was gross. And so they took it out of me. So I don't have an appendix. So pretty cool in that regard.
You can borrow mine if you ever need it.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, I'm looking for an appendix transplant. Do you think you could help me out?
Appendix transplant.
Maybe it's important. I don't know. I'm alive, so. All right. I need an animal.
Is this me? I don't remember.
I don't remember.
Oh no! Yeah, Matt said appendix. Right.
I feel like I've already given two animals. Mike's up.
Okay, Mike.
Let's go with a ornitode.
Ornitode. Don't know why I felt the need to say it like that. All right.
Can you please read it like that when you go through the text?
I will do my best. Now, how do you write that? We talked about the Adam Klein one. But
you put like, write it all wiggly.
Okay. I have no idea what that means or how to do that. Is that a font?
Write it all wiggly.
Wiggly. Okay. I'm going to use Pacifico as a font. That seems to look very wiggly. Okay. Ornitode. Okay. Let's read our story. Man's creator and his best friend was the Titan Boston Rob. Mm-hmm. Zeus had given Boston Rob and his brother Parvati the task of repopulating the earth after hail wiped out all of the living creatures.
I ship.
Boston Rob made all the people and Parv made all the animals. But Boston Rob felt bad for the humans because unlike the chickens, the pterodactyls and the lemurs, they were coughing in the cold nights without fur. So,
well, okay.
I don't know.
Very furry pterodactyls and chickens.
Yes, very furry. So Boston Rob decided to steal the amazing tire to keep them warm. When Zeus found out.
I didn't realize how close I was to fire when I said tire.
Yeah. When Zeus, a.k.a. Adam Klein, found out, he was so constipated.
So Adam did say this episode. He said, I pooped my pants to Michelle when he got caught at Tribal Council. So I guess the opposite happened in this myth.
Right. So Adam Klein chained up Boston Rob to a large calendar to be punished for 2 years. Every day, a horny toad. Is that how you said it?
Yes, I'd say wigglier.
Wigglier, a horny toad.
Oh, there we go.
Okay. Swooped out of the sky and ate his appendix. At night, Boston Rob's appendix grew anew, but every day, the horny toad returned and he was punished again. The end.
Oh, this is beautiful.
That was fun.
Yeah.
Just over here with my bucket of Denise Stapley's listening.
I pay money to watch a horny toad eat Boston Rob's appendix personally.
Ew. I like that it swooped out of the sky. And yeah, the chickens, the pterodactyls, and the lemurs were fine. So they were cool.
They were plentiful in tires. Boston Rob had to steal one for his people.
Man, yeah. Well, and also, you know, I feel chained to my calendar some days. Am I right?
For 2 years, at least.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not very
long.
Think
that's like a giant, like, 2 year planner? That's what he's chained to?
Ah, yes. Yes. So he can count down the days. Technically, he was punished for, you know, all of time, but that's less fun. So.
Oh, so you just made up the 2 years to limit?
Well, I needed a number. I thought it would be more fun.
You're good in a couple years, but for now, you better stay here.
That's right. Yeah, that's apparently 2 years of getting your appendix eaten by a horny toad is equivalent to stealing fire. Like, it's the, you know, the crunish, blah, blah, blah. The punishment has to fit the crime, people. OK,
now I like the crunishment fits the prime.
Yeah, good. We can put that as our other slogan after a little bit of edge of extinction in the mouth or whatever. Yeah. It was.
Running out of room on this jacket.
It's good. It's a big jacket.
It's a windbreaker.
We only have one size of jacket. We're not made of money here. We're not made of fire tokens.
We actually only have one jacket. It's like the travel hood of the sister.
No, the travel hood of the sister pants. I like that even better.
Oh no. Ooh, the sisterhood of the traveling pants. And we just pass the windbreaker around to everybody. So, you know.
What would the travel hood of the sister pants be about? Would it be completely opposite, that the pants would be going on these journeys to Greece and Italy and they'd be passing humans around to wear?
Like buckets of Denise Stapley.
Yeah, exactly.
Little tiny Denise Stapley's. Oh, that's so cute. Oh, man.
So I think
I'm done.
Liana, thank you. You have brought us mythology in two different phrases over the course of like 2 minutes. So I'm so happy. The crunishment did fit the prime here.
It really did. It really did.
I want to talk about.
I'm excited for the jacket. Yeah.
I want to go back to the Tony Fall Yaw thing, because it made me realize that I think Survivor needs more fake outs, you know, like in basketball, where you try to really make your opponent freak out and not do the thing that they want to. Tony obviously pulled one out here where Adam was able to pull the key for quite some time. So do you think we should institute this in challenges? And are there some methods that these contestants can use to really fake out their opponents? Or psych out, that's the phrase.
Yes. Do you know, Mike, from being out on set, can you hear them from the sit-out bench? I don't know how hard it would be to hear people yelling.
So, the challenge that I went to did not have anyone on the sit-out bench. I think it depends.
No one was yelling at you?
Yeah. Nobody was yelling at me. I think the sit-out bench was actually pretty far away. I mean, the sit-out bench in this challenge was at the final platform. So, I mean, you could hear Tony yelling in the background of some shots with Adam, and maybe he's just a loudmouth, but I feel like ordinarily, since the pre-merge challenges in general are very long, it's a little tougher to get yourself projected than maybe these smaller endurance challenges in the post-merge.
Okay, all right. So let's assume that it's feasible to do it. Yes, 100% yes, I'm in on the psych outs. I think it would be really interesting, and it would be so fun to see what creatively people would come up with. Like, can you imagine just people heckling each other? I mean, that's lovely.
Yeah,
I don't want to imagine it now that Tyson's gone. Tyson's got to have the best ones up his sleeve.
That's true. Oh man, that would have been so funny.
Maybe he'll do it like maybe Edge of Extinction, like when the jury gets brought in. Like, oh, maybe Tyson can do that for Tribal Council.
Yeah, that'd be fun. And they still do have one more challenge between, you know, all of them, or, you know, two challenges if they're if they're on there still. So
what are the types of things you think people would yell? Because Tony was, he was going for what he was just saying, like fall, like he was just like yelling at him to fall. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you could get pretty creative with the things, right? It's not just yelling, you know.
Could you do something where, like, let's say, you know, Jeremy's about to jump and you're like, oh, my God, is that Val Collins? And he'll like turn his head and miss the key.
Yes.
Michelle's up on like a big perch. And is that Aubrey Bracco coming in to enter the game?
Yeah, exactly. Like, what's their worst nightmare? And then just bring it up so they momentarily get startled.
Yeah, I'm just imagining now, like, oh, what's that? Oh, like the thing that you do when you know you're very young and people might fall for it, but it could work. It could work.
Or like Yul comes up and like, oh my God, is that the final two? Oh no.
Yeah. I think at the also you could have it where, you know, because they do the challenges, like the puzzles, right? Kind of side by side. Mm-hmm. You could even have the people that are sitting out of the puzzle. You know, obviously Wendell's doing a great job being the coach dad here. But if you're sitting, not really contributing much, you know, that could be your job, right? Everybody has a role. Your job is to heckle and psych out the other team.
Yeah. What would you yell like, wrong? No, that's not right. Stop it. Yeah. Move it over there.
No, to your left, your other left, you know, like yelling out the wrong pieces. Who was it that was yelling numbers? When did that happen?
That happened.
Do you remember that?
Yeah. No, I actually had that exact same thought, that it was definitely during a challenge where they were supposed to remember numbers. And there was someone who was like yelling out a bunch of numbers so that they would get confused. But I think it was when they were counting stuff.
Yes.
Yeah, that sounds familiar.
Was that from Survivor?
Now you're making me really doubt it.
Does anyone
Google search? I don't know.
What am I going to Google? Like that reality TV show where they yelled numbers.
Yeah.
You never know. I've Googled much more embarrassing things. Survivor, like trees, player, plants, so.
Immunity, distraction, yelling. There you go.
those are your keywords. I like it.
I feel like something else you could do, because I will say one of my favorite basketball psych outs was when they faked cutting their finger off with a pair of needle nose pliers. Could you like fake an injury and like pretend that people would get interested to like drop everything and run over to you when really it's a fake injury and everyone just finishes the challenge?
I mean, nobody seemed to care when Lauren passed out at the challenge in season 38. So if that was a real injury and everyone was just kind of still chilling, I don't know if anything's going to change for a fake one.
Yeah, that's true. And I think it would be I think people wouldn't care.
Could you imagine like Tony being like, oh, my God, my hand, and then just like squirting, flicking blood all over Sandra.
Oh, my gosh.
The shock bit my hand. He came back.
That would be, instead of a clue to an idol or something under the sit out bench, you get fake blood packets to distract. Maybe that's what you could buy with your fire tokens.
Fake blood.
Yeah, to distract people during challenges.
Yeah,
or I don't know. Maybe some fireworks. What else would distract people? Very large flags.
Imagine an air horn that people could use on the sit out bench.
Yeah, exactly.
A water sprayer. I'm picturing like when you go to Disney parks and they have water spray at you in certain mm-hmm, attractions. Mm-hmm. Like you can have water spray on somebody from the top.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Water guns. What else could you do? And yeah, and that would be really useful for water challenges.
Like you could have like a bucket of sand you could dump onto somebody.
You could have like a speaker on top of somebody's booth and like Christian Hubicki playing the entire time that they're up there.
Oh, I like
him talking.
I'm sorry, can we go back to the sand, the bucket of sand that you're going to dump on someone? I'm sorry, what?
I don't know why I have this image of like one of these endurance challenges, and then you get to walk by and just dump a bucket of sand on them.
Who are you dumping your bucket on, Mike? I mean, if you're out there with these winners, who are you going to go back to camp having dumped a bucket of sand on?
Man, it really is like the edge of extinction in your mouth right
maybe,
now.
Maybe it was like, you know, when Sophie wanted Albert to drop his stack, she wanted him to do that and pour a bucket of sand over Ozzy so he couldn't win the challenge.
Imagine being the guy that dumped a bucket of sand on Kim Spradlin's head.
Maybe that's why she's so upset. It was unseen in the challenge that they dumped sand on her.
Yes, well, you know, let's raise money for, I don't know, a disease. It'll be the sand bucket challenge.
Oh, God, that sounds terrible. Like, ice, at least it's over with. Sand, you're like just covered in it, you know?
Ugh. I'm like tasting sand in my mouth as we
Yeah, well, okay, well, it's better than the glitter challenge, maybe. The glitter
Ooh, that would be an interesting
challenge.
Way to, like, if you're at the end and you just, like, blow glitter into somebody's face as they, like, come up from an obstacle or something.
Okay, I don't think we want to harm them. We just want to psych them out, okay? Like, this is going into very different territory.
Look, listen, sand bucket is the perfect psychological warfare. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's not pocket sand, it's bucket sand.
Sand bucket forever.
Right.
No, you take the, what you do is you take that glitter and you look through people's bags. If you find somebody that has an idol, you cover the idol with glitter, and that way you can tell everybody around the camp maybe somehow the person who has glitter on their hands is the person who has the idol. I don't know how you can make that work, but we're gonna try it.
Oh, that would be a good distraction, actually, if you, instead of the blood packets, you say, oh my god, is this an extra vote? And then people start looking over and like, oh my god, wait a minute, Sandra just find an extra vote.
Oh man, well, that, if you do have a glitter idol and you hid that in your crotch, that would be very interesting. Glitter crotch.
Oh no, please don't like thrust that at somebody to use it to maximum effect.
Can you even see glitter on TV? Like, if they had glitter on their face, would you even be able to tell?
I think you would. Maybe that's glittery. The problem. I mean, it's definitely not going to be allowed on Edge of Extinction, right? Because those extreme close-ups, you're going to see every nook and cranny.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Gigi Good did glitter for her outfit on RuPaul's Drag Race, and you could see that, but it was kind of hard to see. But up close, yeah, I think you could see it.
Ugh. Hate glitter.
Yeah. It's, I think it's like the herpes of craft supplies, I think, is the joke. Because you can't get rid of it.
No interest. Yeah.
All right, so I think we come up with a good laundry list of things. I would say bucket of sand might be the top one, but I'm not, you know, and I don't want to put the cart before the horse, but just say.
Okay, well, how about this? How about buckets of horny toads, and you dump those out on people?
Oh, and then they eat your appendices.
Your multiple appendices?
Well, I mean of the group, you know, the collective appendix.
Rice, right, of course. Yeah, rice. Rice. Man, he talked pretty one day.
Just imagine like a Survivor-themed answer would be like, rice, of course.
Rice, of course, yes. I think I'll just try to replace all of my verbiage with something related to Survivor.
So yes is rice, no is what, torch?
Oh, because it gets snuffed.
Yeah, exactly.
Fire, as we know, represents your life, so that's an easy one. I'll keep working on it.
All right, we'll create a whole Survivor vernacular B&B secret language by the end of this podcast. Between that and the travel hood of the sister pants, we really just have a lot of new phrases going on.
Travel hood of the sister pants. Yeah, rice. Done.
This has been a podcast. This has certainly been a podcast. We're nearly at the end. Let's talk about the question of the week. We wanted everyone to create their own version of an Edge of Extinction clue. We'll read a few out from you guys. Dan Sedensky has one. A rope is placed on ELE when everyone is asleep. One end is in the camp and the other end is at the advantage. It covers the whole island and crisscrosses over itself so many times that the only way to solve it is by following the whole thing. So spoilers for Australian Survivor, there is one point where a contestant finds an advantage that is sort of attached to a yellow string. I very much thought this situation was going to happen, and I kind of wish it did, because I love this idea of like following this rope seemingly endlessly around the island until it finally leads to, you know, whatever fire token there's there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be really fun. And you can't just start randomly because you don't know if you're going in the right direction. So like it would be really fun.
Yeah, and you have to like leave breadcrumbs or something so that you don't get lost. You get turned around and end up going back the way you came from.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Could you imagine? You let go of the rope for 1 second. You're like, crap, what direction was I going?
Well, might as well start all over again.
Oh man, that's it's pretty torturous. Pretty much the same as having your appendix eaten by a horny toad every night.
Exactly the same. Logan says, very simple. Count the rungs on Tony's ladder to discover a lock combination.
Ah, well, that'd be easy to break if you're trying to.
Yeah, you could be like Natalie, be like, I broke one of the ladder rungs so that Amber won't know the combination.
Yeah, I mean, considering the fact that Tony's breaking ladder rungs all on his own, I don't think it needs help.
It was meant to be like that. Thank you very much.
Yeah, by design.
Of course.
Exactly.
Of course. Breakaway ladder.
So Muhammad has a bit of a tiered plan here. So there's a treasure box that needs to be unlocked by a numbered code. Each player will get a hint about the code, but you need at least 3 hints to figure it all out. Here are the rules. 1, you can persuade with words or fire tokens to have someone share their hint with you. 2, you can, if you tell someone your hint, they can't tell you theirs. If everyone agrees to vote someone unanimously back into the game, their hint becomes public knowledge. And after a certain time, a player at random will lose the ability to get back into the game, but can still win the treasure. Oh, this sounds super interesting. So there's like one big box in the middle of Edge of Extinction. Everyone has like one number of the code, and they basically need to figure out how they can get the other numbers.
You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of those logic puzzles where you have the hints and it's like the grid where you have, you know, you're trying to match everybody up. Okay?
The logic puzzle of like, you have 3 different flavors of ice cream and 3 different people, and you have to figure out who ordered what based off the fact that Bradley doesn't like chocolate, but Cecilia is in the mood for strawberry.
Yes, exactly. The one I'm seeing here is Princesses, Kingdoms, and Sins. That sounds like a fun logic puzzle. I'll do that one later. But yeah, that's exactly what it sounds like, because you need sort of all the hints from all the people, or it's a clue. That was a much simpler analogy than the logic puzzle that I don't know what the name is, and I crudely tried to describe. Much less sinful in the kingdom. But that's what it sounds like to me.
Muhammad also suggested install an arcade game where players have to reach a certain level to get the clue. The order is decided by a random draw, but the game will be difficult enough it will require multiple attempts to beat. What do we think about Edge of Extinction Pac-Man?
I was thinking pinball.
Oh, I like that. Survivor pinball.
There probably is a Survivor pinball.
There was a Survivor slot machine. I don't know if it made its way into pinball.
Seems like something someone would have made at some point, like in Survivor's, you know, first couple seasons, right?
I guess the question is, if you get like the high score, you get a clue. If someone usurps your high score, do you have to like give the clue back?
I don't think so. I think you just get the clue for forever, but you have to put in your initials. Ooh. If you get the top score,
you could trick the other people by being like, wait a minute, Natalie's initials are already in there. She already has that fire token, when really it was Tyson the entire time.
Exactly. Always put Adam Klein's initials.
Easy to remember. John gives a memory from the Dora the Explorer movie where you have to give a statue water to open up the treasure. But if you attempt to take it, you fall into the lava. He says, let's do the same thing. But instead of the lava, you lose your fire tokens and bequeath it to someone else. I'm glad John stayed away from the lava, because I don't know how I feel about people who don't solve the clue getting burned alive by lava.
Yeah, that's a little rough.
Very aggressive for a Dora the Explorer movie.
Those video games were pretty intense.
Really?
You have to have stakes. You have to have some kind of...
For Dora the Explorer?
Yeah.
The video game?
You got to have some kind of resolution, some kind of, a goal and, you know, things that stop you from getting there.
I'm curious about this. Do you have personal experience with Dora the Explorer, the video game?
I don't know if I played Dora the Explorer video game, but a lot of those were all pretty similar. You'd get at the library and then you give it to your dad and then he somehow downloads it onto the computer.
I'm just trying to think of like stakes of like, Dora, we've kidnapped Boots and we're sending a finger one day at a time until you get here with that gold.
It's like Taken. It's the Taken. It's the Dora the Explorer adaptation.
Version, is it like Natalie Anderson goes to try it and they say they have Nadia held somewhere on the island?
Yeah, right. Oh my gosh. Speaking of kids. My God. Kids television shows. I just saw a clip of Peppa Pig where Peppa Pig can't whistle. Have you guys seen this clip? Peppa
No.
Pig can't whistle, and Peppa Pig is sad because she can't whistle. And so she calls up the sheep, her friend, and the sheep's like, oh, I can't whistle either. And then they're like, yay, we both can't whistle. And then the sheep's like, wait, what's whistling? And then the sheep whistles, and Peppa Pig just cold stone hangs up the phone immediately. Just like, beep. As soon and like as this just dead look on her face, it's so funny.
Who is the Peppa Pig of this season?
That's all I know about Peppa Pig. That and Sophie? The little like sound.
Ooh, mm-hmm. I could see that. I could see Sophie be the Peppa Pig of Survivor 40.
Oh my god, also there's 420 episodes of Peppa Pig.
Oh nice.
Yeah. Wow. Cool.
All I see is it's Peppa Pig is a lovable, cheeky little piggy. She's lovable, but slightly bossy. They really like to say that she's lovable. I think they're trying to overcompensate for something.
Yeah, exactly. If you have to say it that many times, you're overcompensating for something.
So maybe we'll leave it to the fans to fan cast Survivor 40 into the cast of Peppa Pig.
Okay, yeah, you do that.
Finally, we got a suggestion from Parker that wasn't necessarily about Edge of Extinction, but he has an idea for the bequeathment of the fire tokens, which is to have the people from the Edge of Extinction sneak into the camp Officer Sarah style and slip the advantages to the player in their bag.
Ooh, okay. Yeah, that would be fun. That would add some new dynamic. I don't think people would be happy about it, though, because it would take away more more time from the game. But if it's sneaking around, as long as Tony helps you, then I think it'll be okay.
Well, I love this idea because, like, imagine, like, you know, oh, there's rustling in the middle of the night. Like, oh, maybe it's a mouse. At a certain point, they're going to be like, get out of here, Survivor contestants. Like, shoo! They keep infesting this camp.
Well, I mean, they can see each other, right, from their beaches now. That's a new thing that we've discovered. So
yeah, that
I'm
was
sure
interesting, right?
There's sooner like or later, going to like
there's a vantage point of the purgatory of Edge of Extinction from the Dekal Beach.
Yeah, Tyson literally wakes up. He's like, "Oh, look, I see someone. They're
I
moving
see my
around.
Future home."
Oh,
ooh,
he was very Sarah Palin. I can see Alaska for Russia from my house or whatever. That was that was my feeling.
Oh, could you imagine like the arguments in the final tribal council debates? Like, I know. You know, Edge of Extinction policy. Well, I can see ELE from my beach.
That's right. It's like I was there.
Exactly. So for next week, we have the Sandra bench that was coined this episode. Listen, it's all, you know, duck off a water's back. Yep, I'm pulling a Liana here. Water off a duck's back when Parvati throws shade at Sandra at the Sandra bench. We love Sandra. We love the Sandra bench. But it made us think of, what other things could you name after players from Survivor's past? Whether they be landmarks, whether they be regular objects, the world is your oyster from that regard. And maybe you'll name someone after the oyster as well. You have a bunch of ways you can reach out to us with any answers you have. You can email us, rhapbnb@gmail.com. You can tweet it to us, #rhapbnb. You can write on Facebook, on Reddit, what you have you. We're going to collate all these answers like a bucket of Denise Stapley's and get into it all with our guest next week. The lovely Allie Lasher is returning to the B&B to break down what I'm sure is going to be a very interesting swap in a very, very fun season. And that's going to conclude this absolutely bananas edition of the RHAP B&B. Matt Ligori, you are the first recipient of the B&B Windbreaker, the first user of Instamatic. We are so happy to have you on board this week. Thanks so much for coming on.
I am so honored to be receiving that jacket, and if it doesn't show up within the next 2 weeks, I will be knocking on the B&B's door again to find out the updated delivery date. Thank you so much, guys, for having me. It was a blast. Like I said, so excited to have a chance to talk about the season of Survivor. It's been so much fun so far. It hasn't been fun so far because I've been watching a lot of my favorites leave the game, but that's going to be the entire season. So, you know, when all is said and done, I do believe we'll end up looking back on it and, of course, having a lot of great things to say about it. But along the way, the ride that we're going on right now has been conflicting, as you know, to say the least. So fun to talk about it. And thanks again for having me.
So
it is quite a journey.
If people want to keep up on your you playing puppy or basically talking about anything under the sun with reality television, how can people catch up with you on social media or check out whatever else you're doing out there?
Yes. Follow me on Twitter at Matt Liguori. I will always be tweeting out anything that I have going on. So if you have not been regularly checking out the power rankings that Mike brought up earlier, definitely do that. I tweet out the link every week. It's also on robisawebsite.com. I've got Gavin and Victoria from season 38 of Survivor that join me every week. And we have a good time just, you know, figuring out who's looking good, who's not looking so good. So there's that. And then also Mike mentioned great setup at the beginning of the episode here. Challenge season will be back sooner or later, probably within a couple weeks. And over on the Dom and Colin podcast, my co-host Brian Scalley and I will be back talking about the season, and I'm very excited for that. Big Brother Canada season's going on right now. So again, Twitter for any of my thoughts on that. And yeah, that's what I got.
So the new season of the challenge, it's called Total Madness. Am I right?
Total Madness. Yeah, I don't remember if I heard a name. Usually you hear the name like while they're filming. I don't remember hearing anything at all. But if I did, it wasn't this. So at least it's not War of the Worlds 3 is all I can say.
This is madness. This is madness. Total madness.
Total okay. Madness.
Yeah, this like really, I don't know. That reminds me of like, this would be like the name of a show from like the heyday of the 90s in MTV, mm-hmm. right? Like had like yeah. Total Request Live. Like I feel like there would be a show maybe next to like Ridiculousness called Total Madness.
Right. Like they want Ridiculous to be on the air at all times. So their way of keeping that going is by naming a show that also gets airtime on their network. Something that sounds just like Ridiculousness. Total Madness.
I like the strategy. So just call all your shows synonyms of Ridiculousness. So everyone yeah. will just think the same shows on all the time.
And then eventually when the challenge is off and Ridiculous is, you know, the only thing airing as normal, then you'll be used to it.
It is literally the only thing ever on MTV.
Like the only thing.
If anybody ever asks you, hey, what do you think is playing on MTV right now? Ridiculousness is exactly the thing that you should say because it is literally always on. God, it's so annoying. okay, I'm on social media at Liana Boris. I am on Instamatic at Liana Matt. So look for me there. Podcast wise, I did the Masked Singer with Kuya Zanvakili. We talked about the last episode of Group B. I'm going to be getting together with Mon and Brent to talk about RuPaul's Drag Race, the second part of the premiere. And we will address some of the news that came out recently about the situation. Don't you worry. And then my sister and I also did the Lego Masters podcast covering episodes 2, 3, and 4. So if you're interested in that, check that out. Everything is on Reality TV or Half Up.
How good do you think Lego Masters would be, Master Builders would be on like Survivor puzzles? Like, do you think they'd ace that puzzle that Nick and Sarah floundered on this episode?
I think so. I think spatial reasoning and that type of logic, that type of intelligence is really important for Legos. And these pieces kind of fit together like Legos per se. So yeah, and if the judges are there judging them, like maybe they won't have so much pressure. I don't know, it might be easier.
Well, that'd be interesting. So instead of actually solving the puzzle, it's build your own version of the puzzle and then you'll be judged on it.
Yes, exactly. Do a creative interpretation of a Survivor puzzle. It also has to move.
Oh, I like this. Okay, so maybe if we merge these shows, if we merge more networks, maybe that can become a thing. A man can dream. You can follow me at a Mike Bloom type. You can check out the Survivor writing I'm doing over on Parade this past week. As we said, unfortunately, Tyson Apostle got voted out. I was very happy to talk with the other coconut bandit from back in season 27. Jervis Never Nervous Peterson talked with me about his thoughts on Tyson getting voted out. You know, he obviously dealt with a very not similar situation, but this idea of joining up against people who have connections in the game. Also the idea of targeting people who have more experience than others in terms of a Survivor resume. There's a lot of really interesting parallels between what happened, and Jervis had a lot of really interesting insight. So be sure to check all that out. Also teasing that I actually will have a very interesting conversation with one of this season's current players coming up, but you'll have to fill in the Mad Libs blanks in a couple days to figure out exactly who that is. But very excited about that. I was on with Shannon Gus this past week on the Australian Survivor recap. It was a very cathartic podcast. It was a tough week for Australian Survivor, but Shannon and I had a lot of fun talking about the good, the bad, and the ugly that's come with this season and what more fun is to come as well. So be sure to check all that out if you're caught up on Survivor AU. Over on Post Show Recaps, I'm, of course, always going down the hatch with Josh Wigler covering Lost, as well as back out in the SARS with Jessica Lease covering Star Trek Picard. And I'm sure much more stuff to come in the future as well. That's going to do it this week for the B&B. Thank you all so much for listening to the nonsense for this particular episode. I'll be very intrigued to see how people feel, but we'll keep on keeping on. We'll keep on being silly because we're here for the fun and games. And this is a very fun season, as heartbroken as we may be. So we're going to be back next week with Ali Lasher to break down episode 5. If you guys have game ideas that you want to send to us, we are all ears open to any sort of requests you may have. Make sure you email them or tweet them to us, rhapbnb@gmail.com. Special thanks to Scott St. Pierre for editing everything behind the scenes, our head writer Paul Osselson, and Wolfram America for our theme song. Matt, Liana, thank you both so much for your fantastic work this week. We'll be back next week with Ali Lasher covering everything Swamp and much, much more. But for now, we'll check you out at your next stay.
Mike and Liana, yeah, they're playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the R-H-A-P-B-M-B. Mike and Liana, yeah, they're playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name.